Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. A shout out to my channel members and my patrons. Make sure you smash that like button too, and subscribe if you haven't already. Now, sit back and relax, and get ready for tonight's scary story. I didn't know it was happening at first. You can't blame me. I was only a kid when it had started. I grew up in a small town in central Ontario with my father. My mother left when I was very young, leaving him to raise me on his own. I was his pride and joy, his only son. I remember him saying how lucky he was a lot. "How lucky am I to have a kid like you?" He'd say it with a twinkle in his eye after I aced a test or scored a goal at one of my soccer games. I always felt happy to be his kid. All the adults around me loved my father. He was an upstanding citizen, a model member of the community. He worked as a lawyer, an attorney. He made enough money for our tiny little family to live perfectly comfortable. I had a good childhood, needless to say. It was only around the age of 11 when things changed. My dad was still a good father, still loving and caring, but something changed. I could mark the day it happened in my mind, the day that it stopped, the day when he left before it came back in his place. I had just lost my front tooth. I remember being so happy and excited to put it under my pillow, eagerly awaiting the morning, knowing I'd find a toonie under my pillow for my troubles. I was all curled up in my bed, fast asleep. I felt my father shake me awake. I squinted up at him, eyes hazy without my glasses. The room was still dark, and I could hear him breathing heavily.
"Lucas, kiddo."
His voice was rushed and hoarse.
"Lucas. I don't have time to explain everything, okay? Everything is going to be all right, okay?"
"What's happening, Dad?" I whined out, just wanting to roll back over and go back to sleep. He squeezed my scrawny arm tightly, keeping me facing him.
"I did something wrong, kiddo. I made a mistake, and I have to go for a little while, Lucas,"
he said, struggling to keep his tone even. "Where are you going?" I asked groggily.
I'll be out of town for a few days, I promise. I'll get Gracie to babysit. You like Gracie, remember?"
He was trying to sound jovial, like it was a good thing. At the time, I didn't think anything of it. I did like Gracie. She bought me pizza and chips for dinner. I hate to say it, but at the time, that was enough for me to accept it. I nodded, and he smiled at me.
"Good, I'm glad. I love you, Lucas,"
he said, planting a kiss on my forehead. Those few days were good. I didn't even know what had happened. I ate pizza and watched TV. I drew pictures for Gracie. I played hide-and-seek with my neighbors. And then, my dad came back. He looked just like him, but he was cold all of a sudden, quiet, reserved when he wasn't before. He spent a lot of time away from me. He forgot to get the groceries some days. He forgot to come to my soccer games, or put my ACE tests up on the fridge like he used to. He started spending more and more time out in the backyard shed. Our once happy home was cold and gray. For the longest time, I was convinced that I had done something to make him hate me. It didn't stop at a neglectful father either. It was like the house itself had turned on me. It was an old house. We had issues with it before, but something changed about it. I remember one day going to take a shower. I stepped into the old tub and turned on the water, standing underneath the showerhead and waiting for the water to come. For a long moment I waited, and then I heard the pipes creak. Murky, rusty brown water hit me in a torrent. I stood there under it, unsure of what to do. red staining my hair, making me feel sick. I called for my dad out of confusion, leaping out of the bathtub and wrapping a towel around myself. When he showed up in the doorway, he looked me over, shivering from the cool air and drenched in disgusting water, and he laughed at me. He howled with laughter, cruel in its amusement and making my face burn with shame. I couldn't keep myself from crying, and even then he just continued to laugh. Things only got worse from there. He didn't tuck me in at night anymore. He spent hours in the shed, or in the attic, or fixing the pipes in the basement by the water heater. The pipes acted up more and more. I'd go to fill my water bottles and cups, only to find the pipes sputtering out rusty brown water. I'd wake up to the sound of dripping, finding moldy wet spots in the corners of the rooms, dribbling water from a leak somewhere up in the ceiling. I asked him, over and over, just to get a plumber to go into the attic and fix it, that the problem wasn't with the water heater. But every time I mentioned the attic, he would get angry. He would just stare me down and say, "I don't let anyone in the attic. They'd make a mess of all my hard work." I wasn't allowed to go into the attic anymore, nor was I allowed in the shed or the basement. The pipes weren't alone either. Next were the lights. Every time my father entered a room, the lights would sputter and flicker. I recall being in the kitchen one day. He came in to use the sink, and the ceiling light just started to flicker before bursting. He hardly even registered, just looked at it blankly, before leaving the room, leaving me to clean it up. I started acting up in school. I started yelling at the teachers. I started handing in my work half-finished. I started smoking cigarettes behind the portables, all in some desperate attempt to get my dad to even give me a second glance. None of it worked. Even when the teachers called home, all I'd get was, "Tell them to stop calling. I don't like interruptions." I think ultimately it was my anger that clouded my perception of what was happening. I remember one night. I was just 15 at the time. I remember looking out the window of my bedroom, blowing smoke out through the screen. I saw the backyard light turn on and watched the gate to the backyard open. My father was there. He started spending time out at night. I assumed he was just drinking, but I was clearly wrong, because behind him, he dragged an old wagon with the tarp over it. Whatever was under it was lumpy and misshapen, twisted up and gnarled. He dragged it into the shed and closed the door behind him with a loud bang. I could hear the whirl of tools from the shed, but nothing more. The next morning, when I was getting ready for school, the TV was turned on. I didn't pay attention until the program was interrupted with breaking news. A hitchhiker had gone missing. They were last seen in a bar from the town over. I got a sinking feeling in my gut, but I didn't know where to place it. There was no way I could connect the two incidents. I couldn't say for sure that what was under that tarp was what I thought it was. It happened again 2 months later. A hitchhiker, this time, last seen in our town, and that same night, the wagon with the tarp over it. And again 2 months after that, this time with a teenager from my school. I kept my mouth shut. I don't know why I did, but I kept quiet, even as strangers and townspeople alike kept going missing. I couldn't admit that it was happening to myself, even as I stopped yelling in class, stopped handing in assignments in late, even as I tried to be good for fear of ending up like those people in my father's shed. I was 16 when I received the letter. My father never checked the mail. It was always my job. I'm thankful for that now. Among the magazines, junk mail, and newspapers, there was a letter in a simple white envelope. I unfolded the paper, walking back to my room. "Lucas, it's been years since I saw you. Every day I regret leaving, and every day I wish this had never happened. I don't have much time to explain everything, but you have to believe me when I tell you that the thing you've been living with in our house is not your father. It's not me. It's wearing my face and using my voice, but it's not me. I know you won't believe me, but please, all I want for you is to be safe. I'm still out here. I had to run away. They said it would hurt you if I tried to intervene. But I'm still out here. I'm in a small town in northern Quebec. I can't specify further, but I'm in Quebec. I love you, son. Love, Dad. I stared down at the piece of paper, my hands shaking. I wanted to believe it. I wanted to believe those words on the page more than anything, but I couldn't. It was just a twisted prank someone pulling on me. It couldn't be true. But no matter how much I told myself that it couldn't be real, that doubt seated itself in my mind. It was such an abrupt change. I was just sure that he had gotten sick of me, but that doubt was enough. A month passed before it happened again. I crept out of the bed and down the stairs, taking the front door and going around the side of the house to make sure he wouldn't hear me. The grass was wet under my sneakers, and the cool autumn breeze sent a chill down my spine. I kept low, finally reaching the shed. I could hear better now. There were no power tool sounds, but instead I could hear wet tearing, like the sound of someone butchering a chicken, the wet plop and slurp of peeling meat from bones. I felt sick, but I had to be sure. I inched my way up, peeking in through the grimy window. I froze. Standing at the work table was that thing. That thing that stole my father's face. It was just like my father in every respect, but my father's face was peeling away, thrown back over its shoulders like the hood of a sweater, a seam down the middle. It wasn't real skin. It was like a rubber costume, lifeless and empty. The thing underneath his face. It was like it was rotting, grain and embracing muscles with no flesh to keep it protected from the elements, mottled and meaty like dry aging steak. There were holes through its skin and bones, small like sockets for something to fasten the meat on. Its arms were spindly and just so wrong, bones pudging out and stretching the skin and blending in unnatural places. On its table was a body, or what was once a body before he tore it apart. It was peeling the meat off the bones. I half expected it to start eating, but it didn't. It just set the meat aside. I wanted to look away. I wanted to run, but I couldn't. I couldn't bring myself to move, even as bile rose in my throat. It tossed the bones aside, and then reached up to its head and pulled a chunk of molted gray meat off its skull. My stomach lurched, but I couldn't tear my eyes away. I just stared at the object horror as it plucked a strip of meat off the table and shoved it into place where its old flesh once was. And then it picked up a screw and screwdriver and started bolting it back into place. I finally willed myself to move, queasing, staggering across the yard and around the side of the house. I looked over my shoulder at it, but it was too busy. It couldn't hear me. I threw up at the side of the house into our trash can, my whole body shaking from head to toe. I felt faint, but I managed to make it inside and up to my room. I didn't sleep that night. I couldn't sleep that night at all. In the morning I left for school, unsure of what to do. I didn't have long before he would catch on that I was acting different. I couldn't run. I was sure he would catch me. There was only one thing I could do. It was after school. It was sitting in the living room in his armchair like it always did, eyes glued to the screen, completely still, hardly even breathing, just pretending to. It didn't ask how my school day was, didn't greet me or even say hello. Good. I walked past it and up the stairs. The metal bat was heavy in my hands, but it fit in them snugly. I walked into the living room behind me quietly, socked feet nearly silent on the carpet. I raised the bat over my shoulder. You know, after my father disappeared, I had always thought he looked different, looser around the edges, too much like plastic, but just enough not to raise any alarm bells. But I think it was the shape of his face that tipped me off the most. The bones weren't his under there, cheekbones too high, and eyes too sunken in. I think it must have borrowed a different skeleton. Whoever's skeleton it was had been getting more and more fragile over the 5 years of pretending, because as my back collided with the side of its head, the side of it sunk in with a loud, resounding crunch like the sound of a piñata being hit. It reeled to the side before staggering out of the chair, whirling itself around to face me with its now drooping skin half slogging off. I didn't waste any time, swinging again and hitting the other side of its head with similar results. It tumbled to the ground, reaching out and letting out an agonizing scream in my father's voice. I didn't feel any remorse, stomping down onto its arm with a crack and hitting again and again and again until its head was nothing but mush behind its mask. I breathed heavily, staggering backwards, staring down at it. It was still for a long moment, and then it began to wrath, flopping about like a fish out of water, convulsing and squirming. The body rolled itself over, back arching up and down. I heard tearing, my father's shirt drenched in blood before tearing open. I shielded my eyes. A bright light filled the room. Crawling out of this thing's chest was a being, a human-shaped person composed entirely of shifting, blinding light. It split open the creature's sternum and stands to its feet, staring at me for a long moment. And then it faded away into nothingness. And I was alone in the living room. The steering wheel feels real under my hands. I left with the bag I had packed that morning and my father's wallet and keys, taking the car in my driveway and setting out for Quebec. It's been 5 days. Every time I get any sleep, I have these dreams. Dreams of that thing made of light. But they are more of them, climbing into humans' bodies and looking for other humans they could take to sustain their form or give them to others. In my dreams, they leave me messages and letters I can't understand. I scream at them that I don't know what they are talking about, but they know I will understand in time. I try not to sleep unless I have to. It doesn't matter what they tell me. It doesn't matter that I could see them walking in the forest at night and floating in the sky like the bodies of the drowned. I don't care how long it takes. I just want to see my dad again.